Have you ever looked at an eggplant or an artichoke and wondered, how would that be prepared in a classical French method? Do you look at the vegetables in the produce section and wonder, just how complicated can cooking them be? You might be surprised, given some of the recipes so far in this Escoffier series, that some vegetable cookery you already might be in step with from a classical French approach. We begin chapter 13 of Le Guide Culinaire of the Escoffier series, Vegetables and Farinaceous Products. The Eating Liberty Podcast, episode 281, Food and Freedom, once a week for life. Hello folks, Dan Reed here. Welcome back to the show. My culinary career included working for about a dozen chefs, two of whom were certified master chefs. Classical French cooking is the standard for master chefs, and they made sure we knew how to keep that standard. I've taught that standard to culinary students and line cooks, and now I'm sharing that with you. You don't need to have a professional kitchen to benefit from sound cooking fundamentals. So the Escoffier series continues with Chapter 13, Vegetables and Farinaceous Products. Now, farinaceous is going to be your gnocchi and polenta and noodles, which he calls macaroni, which is funny to this American since all pasta in Michigan was noodles, no matter what it was. But anyway, that's another story. And then veggies, well, that's rather plain. And yes, we're going to include at least one fruit in the vegetable category, which is, by the way, a massive category. And it would be impossible for anyone to account for them all. And certainly we don't expect that of Escoffier or anybody else. He does list a few, however, and I'm going to read them to you so you see at least some breadth and depth. Artichokes, asparagus, eggplant, cardoons, carrots, celery, seps or flap mushrooms, morels, chanterelles, chayote, I think that's how I say it, endive, Belgian endive, cabbage, white and green, missing was red, cabbage derivatives like kale, broccoli, kohlrabi, turnip, Brussels sprouts, cucumbers, Japanese artichokes, spinach, fennel, broad beans, okra, green beans and various dried beans, lettuce, corn, chestnuts, onions, sorrel, sweet potatoes, peas, pimentos, potatoes, rice, salsify, tomatoes, Jerusalem artichokes, and that rounds it out. Now, they are listed in alphabetical order by the French word, not the English word. Now, I'll wager you were surprised by at least two vegetables listed in the cooking part, cucumbers and lettuce. We're going to get to that, but not in this show. You might have thought of one vegetable he didn't include. You might have noticed mushrooms were segregated by seps or flat mushrooms, most of the rest of the mushrooms, and then morels and chanterelles, which were identified particularly. With all of that, there are some basics about vegetable cookery that are the beginning of the cooking process. Green vegetables should be cooked in enough salted boiling water so the water never stops boiling when the veg is added. You might be thinking, that's a lot of water. It can be, or it's only a few pieces of veg that are cooked at a time. The green vegetables should be refreshed or shocked if it is to be held for later use, like in a restaurant. Shocked means lifting the veg out of the boiling water and placing it in ice water to stop the cooking. Shocking the veg ends the cooking process and preserves that nice green color. As is so often the case, we're already in a conflict. If you are preparing a case of green beans for service, well, A, that's a lot of green beans, and that's about an hour or so boiling and shocking green beans. Blanching too many vegetables at once does risk color loss. Now, I'll admit that unless you have a color wheel next to you, or you look at the first one in and the last one out and all that stuff, the shades, it's almost indeterminate. It does happen, and you will say, oh, that's kind of overcooked. You can notice wildly overcooked. You're not going to miss that. The other problem with crowding the water, so to speak, is it also risks nutrient loss. The longer the vegetable is in the water, the more of what's in the vegetable, let's say the green beans, comes out of the green bean and goes into the water. Most of those vitamins are water soluble. That includes, there's water in the vegetable too, and sodium, which is why we salt the water before blanching the vegetables. Now, I've seen enough food cooking shows that the basic guide is it should taste like the sea. Well, okay, that's great. If you've never left Minnesota, that's not useful information. So I do a generous tablespoon for my 6-quart, it's not really a stock pot, but whatever they call it, 6 quarts, I fill it up full, and about a tablespoon of water, tablespoon of salt goes into that. There isn't really much benefit to adding more salt. At some point you're adding pennies, and it's not a lot, but unless you're using really fancy salt for boiling vegetables, which I don't recommend doing. I use really good salt for seasoning my food. For boiling of things, I use the bulk stuff, white stuff from the bulk bins at the grocery store, because I'm mostly not eating it. The sodium level in the water should be at least the same as the sodium level in the vegetable. Now, there's no way, I have no idea what that is, but if we make it good and salty, then we are getting close to, we hope, some equilibrium between the salt in and the salt out. And in an environment like that, the vegetable will keep its sodium, which is a lot of words to say, the vegetable will taste better because it has its own sodium still inside. Now, there's a valid conversation to be had about nutrition in boiling vegetables, and boiling vegetables depletes at least half of the available nutrients, particularly for those cabbagey things, vitamin C. Now, there's a whole rabbit hole about what various cooking methods do to vegetable nutrients. And all cooking destroys some level of nutrient. Scoffier may have had nutrition in mind, but his primary focus seems to be both appearance and flavor. Now, Scoffier uses the term blanching mostly here. We'll get into another way it's used. I'll mention it in a little bit. As a term for green vegetables. I don't want to get ahead of myself. When he's doing that, he's really talking to a restaurant audience of cooks, not home cooks. Although you certainly can use the book, it's important to just remember who he's talking to. The goal of blanching, as he describes it, is to partly or mostly cook the vegetable so when service time comes, that vegetable, let's say green beans, is 90% cooked. So you either you put in a pan with some butter, put in a pan with some water, you have a dedicated pot on the stove for green vegetables. There's a variety of ways to get cold veg hot to go onto the plate, but it's a process to speed up service. That's the only reason it's done, is to make service faster and more efficient, which is two words that mean the same thing. So we have as the line cook, you have these beans, and you're going to heat them up. In the process of getting them in the pan, getting the pan hot, adding the seasoning, salt and pepper, and once they are hot and ready to go on the plate, they are now completely fully cooked, so that the customer enjoys hot, fresh, cooked, seemingly green beans. Blanching, which I mentioned a minute ago, is something that might be remembered from peeling tomatoes. If you're going to make, there's a variety of reasons you want to skin a tomato. And the way you do that is drop it in boiling water, depending on how ripe it is, 10 to 30 seconds, pull it out, shock it in that ice bath. And if your tomato is really, really ripe, It's just as a joy. It really is. The skin just peels off in the thinnest possible skin, and the tomato flesh underneath is firm and shiny, and it's just, yeah, it's kind of sexy. It really is. It's a lot of fun. Peaches do the same thing. It's just, wow. It's when it works well, man, oh man, is that fun. So that's not the blanching we're talking about. Escoff has a section about cooking dried vegetables. I don't know what the circumstances were in France when he wrote this book. Nowadays, preppers may have dried vegetables on hand. I recently did some recipe development using dried vegetables, and it's a very different thing. One seemingly important tidbit that Escoffier writes about dried vegetables is that good quality dried vegetables, not more than 12 months old, should not require soaking. I guess I should have read this before I did my testing. Cooking them in cold water on low heat, bringing them slowly to a boil, you're going to get some protein scum coming on top. Skim that off. That should be more than enough to get your dried vegetables ready to use and keep the water. Just go with that. I don't know anybody who uses dried vegetables, but I know that dried food, dried veggie, dried butter, dried cream cheese, dried cream, dried sour milk is a surprisingly vibrant market. But that could be another show. It's interesting stuff. Braised vegetables is also mentioned. He offers a very particular procedure for braising, which includes pork fatback and white stock. Now, he would use veal there, but we could use chicken easily enough. What is missing is any suggestion of a stewed vegetable. Stewed tomatoes, in fact. It's not there. Now, I've made stewed tomatoes and a lovely stewed fennel dish that was an excellent accompaniment to some protein I don't exactly recall right now. Braising would be done in an earthenware pot, ideally. Put thin fat back on the bottom of the pot, diced mirepoix on top of that. The veg to be braised, which has been blanched, celery hearts, for example, would be a braised veg. More fat back. Place it on low heat on the stove to loosen the fat and extract some more of the vegetable juice, not just the water from the celery, but some of the stuff that's left inside. Add just enough white stock to barely cover the veg, affix a lid or a foil, and finish that veg in the oven. It's going to take probably an hour. Now, I don't think I've ever once done that cooking procedure. Kind of danced around it a little bit, but not really that exactly. It sounds good. Parsnips is one of my all-time favorite vegetables, and they would certainly benefit from low and slow cooking, and, you know, fat, who's going to argue about that? overgrown fennel bulbs and celery and woody carrots would also be made better by that process. Stewing, at least as I do it, starts with the fat, usually butter, then an aromatic, leeks or onions, depending on what the primary ingredient is, possibly garlic, the primary ingredient, flavorings of spices and or herbs, and liquid if it's necessary. We made something called melted leeks, which were leek rounds, washed and rinsed of sand, and sweated in a decent amount of whole butter and salt and pepper. Now, it takes about a half an hour to make them wilt, to look like they've melted, and what you end up with is the sweetest pile of leeks you've ever had. They nearly disintegrate in your mouth, and they are an excellent accompaniment to a charred steak or something grilled with a touch of bitter. Because they're so sweet, you want contrast, not compliment for that. Something acidic would be nice. They could be, actually, you could put them on the side. The Italians are fond of serving something pickled on the side, even in a separate dish to go with a rich, heavy meal. Because that, well, it's a whole different thing, but that acid and the pickle thing helps you digest your food better, and it opens up your palate. Several things happen, but it's a nice little treat. So putting some melted leeks in a small dish on the side of something that's spicy and rich. You're going to have rich and rich, but that would be okay. Penne arrabbiata. Wouldn't that be nice? That'd be fun. So the other thing is home cooks have a different challenge. First of all, we are not happily cooking cases of green beans at a time. And while I'm here, let me add this confusing phrase. Some restaurants use a green bean that's rather uniform in length and width. They look like thin pencils, about 4 inches long, and are wonderfully green. They're very cute. They're kind of pretty, actually. They also have a very confusing name of haricot vert. H-A-R-I-C-O-T. Haricot means bean in French, and vert is green. So if you ask Frenchmen for haricot vert, be prepared for a at least possibly confounded or confused expression. You may find such green beans packaged in small plastic clamshells for a rather tidy sum. They're tasty, but I don't value them for whatever the price is they're asking. As home cooks, our challenge is to get everything ready at mostly the same time so all the food is hot going on the plate. To do that, there are ways to achieve flavor and appearance that don't have entries in this book. I never boil spinach, ever. I always cook it on the stovetop in whole butter. Now, spinach, you maybe have seen the memes. It's really funny. It'll show you 55 bags of spinach before cooking and 3 leaves of spinach after cooking. Now, yes, that's a joke, but only slightly is it a joke. Spinach has an astonishing ability to disappear. So a bag of spinach was probably enough. It's enough for two, depending on how much you like spinach, but it's not going to go very far. So in a really wide pan, whole butter, melt that, add your spinach. It seems these days versus 30 years ago, spinach is either grown hydroponically, so there's no dirt involved, or washed so well, there's no dirt involved. There was a time when you open a bag of spinach and you're getting in the beach with spinach to go with it. Luckily, that's not the case anymore. So add your spinach to the pan. Let that cook way down. You have to stir it a lot, but as it gets hot, it's going to just disappear. I like my spinach cooked. I don't mean just wilted. I mean actually cooked. So it's going to get really small. Near the end of the cooking process, I'm going to add garlic, because if I add garlic before, if I put garlic in the pan first, it's going to be covered up by all the spinach. There's a superior chance nearly 100% chance that the garlic will burn before I have a chance to actually get to it and do anything. And now I've just ruined a bag of spinach. So garlic near the end to control the cook. And when the garlic is done and you smell the aroma, it's a little bit of freshly grated nutmeg on the spinach, and then a little bit of salt and pepper. Now, spinach is weird. It has a lot of oxalic acid and a few other things in it. Spinach tastes salty even when you haven't salted it. I know that. I'm going to add a little bit of salt anyway because I know that's kind of a taste trick. It's definitely going to notice if it isn't salted when you eat it with a bite of something else. And then, of course, fresh ground black pepper on top of that. Now, depending on what your accompaniment is with that spinach, if you happen to be a person who saves various animal fats, say you've got bacon fat and pork fat and beef fat, and maybe you have duck fat, whatever you're serving, if there's something that's complementary better than butter, it could happen, then use that fat. Now, asparagus can be grilled or roasted on medium-high heat. Fat asparagus, now, my thumb and your thumb aren't the same, but asparagus about as fat as your thumb probably should be peeled. The peels start to, they're woody anyhow, but on the small asparagus, it's not really too bad. You don't hardly notice because they break down. When they get really big, that woody texture doesn't break down, and it's a rather unattractive thing to have asparagus hanging out of your face because you can't bite through it. The fibers are really, really, really hard to bite. So peel the asparagus. Now you have really pretty green, and that's very attractive. There's another thing to do with asparagus, which I'm going to get to in a sec. Let me finish the oven. So either on the sheet pan or in a bowl, drizzle a little bit of extra virgin olive oil over all the asparagus, get it coated well, season with salt and pepper, lay it flat on the sheet pan so all the asparagus is touching the pan, and into, 400, 425 degree oven. And you might need to turn them or roll them if the tips allow rolling. Sometimes they bend and you can't roll them, to get color all the way around. And now you have a nice roasted asparagus that tastes great, looks a little different because it's got those nice brown char looks on it, and that tastes good. And it goes great with a steak. If you're going to boil your asparagus, I recommend an extra step. Tie the asparagus with butcher twine near the end and near the tip. As many as you can hold between your thumb and a forefinger, or, you know, just something like that. That's a good size package. Tie it twice, and then drop it into the boiling water. The advantage is that when you go to lift it out, either with a tuning fork, a kitchen fork, your tongs, you lift out all those asparagus in one shot, and then they go into the shocking water, and now you've got them nice and cold. Now, why would you shock boiled asparagus after I just talked about home cooks not needing to do that? Cold asparagus with orange mayonnaise is an absolute delight, and of course you're going to make your own mayonnaise for that. Cold asparagus and prosciutto ham or salami is also fantastic. There are lots of ways to turn cold asparagus into different kinds of salads. You can cut them up and add them with pasta. I had a thought. I don't know how it worked. If you roasted the little tiny red skin potatoes, cut them in half, season with olive oil, salt, and pepper. Maybe you have your own seasoning mix. And then roast them cut side down till they get a really good color and are completely cooked. Let them cool. And mix the cooked cold potatoes with that nice, not charred, roasted end. So it's a little bit of toothsomeness to it. And that cooked asparagus, It's too soon for fresh savory. It's not too soon for fresh thyme. Thyme would be okay. It wouldn't be ideal. Marjoram would be better. Oregano cyst or marjoram would work. Might be too early for marjoram. Chives is too potent. Chives, it might work. I don't think it would. It doesn't sound right to me. Little teeny bit of onion, light vinegar, like a rice wine vinegar, balsamic or tarragon. That's too much, Mike Tyson. It's too tough. It'll beat it up. You need something more delicate. Rice wine vinegar, a champagne vinegar, or something for a touch of acid to brighten up the flavors, but not, you don't want a tough guy there. You want compliment. I don't know. Just an idea. It just came to me. Sounds kind of yummy. It's a good springtime thing to have because asparagus is coming. All right. So there's a lot more to get to. This is a good start. The main thing is cook your green vegetables in as much water as your pot will hold. Cut back an inch so it doesn't go over the edge and make a mess. And don't crowd the boiling water. So it's a basic physics thing. Water at sea level boils at 212. If you're adding something into 212, that is, let's say 75 degrees, you're lowering 212, and water's going to stop boiling pretty quickly after that. So if you get down into the 200s, it's a real fine line. There's no green bean police, but it's going to leach flavor. It's going to leach nutrients, if that matters to you. It's going to take longer to cook. And this is the trade-off. Put in two handfuls of beans and it takes 10 minutes to cook. Put in one handful of beans two times, it takes 10 minutes to cook. You just do 5 and 5. So it doesn't, it's a weird thing. It's from the colors, from purely aesthetics, less veg more often is better just because it's prettier. But anyway, then there's those other things. I'm going to get to a lot more of that. We're going to go through some of the things he says to do, and I'm going to tell you some of the ways we worked around that because the results were good. Potatoes will probably be an episode all by themselves because there's a lot that you can do with a potato. And it's just like, wow, mind-boggling. So many different ways to go. The starches will probably also be a separate episode for the gnocchi and noodles. And there's just there's chapters. It's almost 50 pages. Too much to go into without getting dizzy. I have no doubt I will mention this at least one more time in talking about vegetables. The French, especially in the 1980s, and maybe that was the American version of French cooking, who knows, were all about al dente vegetables. Now, that took on a very broad interpretation, and each chef guarded his or her specific idea of what that was with a passion. Those veg had crunch first, flavor second. The Italians are far more interested in flavor first, and flavor comes from slightly overcooked vegetables. Makes people crazy. That's not a hard and fast rule, of course. It's simply an observation from eating a lot of food. I tend toward the overcooked vegetables since I do think they have more flavor. It has the added benefit of driving a few people I know absolutely crazy. So, there are some perks. All right, folks, that's going to do it. I'll add the text from this show to the show notes page, culinarylibertarian.com/281. Would you find it useful if I published a recipe or two from each section of the book, recipes that I've used, not just made up, things that I've actually done? I know Escoffier's procedures can sometimes seem overwhelming. Maybe my procedures seem overwhelming. Would it be of any use to you to have something you can use to start with? Let me know. Send me an email. Or if you find this on social media, comment in wherever it was. It's probably Facebook. Might be Twitter. By the way, spring has sprung mostly here. The last 3 years, we've had a frost in the first week of June. So nothing matters until the first week of June. June 7th, then it's officially okay to get plants outside. The garlic is coming up. Oh, so nice. I'm really excited about it. But all of this is just a reminder that it is time to start the seeds, at least, you know, if you plan to have a garden this year. So there's that. Have a good week, and I'll see you soon.
Music for the Culinary Libertarian Podcast is provided by Matthew Bankert at mattbankert.com.